Throughout my years in the yeshiva, and I recall with tremendous, when I recall about the yortzeit of Reb Dov, I don't know exactly how to say this over in a slightly better way, but it was an exciting day. The Beis Medrash would fill with former Talmidim, present Talmidim of the yeshiva. They'd come from the tri-state area. Talmidim Reb Dov would come. There'd be a tremendous energy in the Beis Medrash. The feeling was electric. There would be anticipation for the yortzeit share, for the Divrei Zikaron that would be coming. And what everyone would be hearing from the Rishiva Zatzal and from all the other Talmidim of David who would be speaking. I recall vividly having the feelings of trying to, after hearing the share, trying to put aside the need to work it over in order to be able to focus on what the Rishiva would be talking about when he would talk about Reb David. We just heard a Pilpul share, we just spent a while trying to work on it, and we'd hear the share, and then immediately go right afterwards to trying to listen to the Divrei Zikaron, having to try to battle, knowing that what we're going to be hearing about Reb David would be tremendously insightful, and at the same point, having that natural desire to go over the share, try to get the steps straight, and trying to juggle those two things. The picture that I have of Reb David is one of a true Adam Gadol. The picture was painted brilliantly by the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal. He would relate to us stories that imparted on us life lessons, which were and are so crucial for our daily lives. Often at the Yortzeit Show, the Rosh Yeshiva would say over a story from the very early days of after Reb David was Miyasa the Yeshiva. He would talk about a woman who used to come and drop off vegetables or fruits every once in a while, and something that was desperately needed for the yeshiva, some funds, something to help them going. And that woman, when she would drop off the vegetables, would berate Reb David and talk to him not nicely. The yeshiva went over to his father and said, "Shouldn't we just tell her to stop? It's not nice." And the Reb David responded that, of course, he would love it if this woman would stop, and he'd be okay. But Lamaisa, if this is the way Hashem is giving us our parnasa, I'm going to take it. That lesson of Amunah Bitachon that was being instilled in us, that the Rishiva was instilling us by saying over the story of the realization that Lamaisa, if the money wouldn't come, we'll figure out some other way to manage. But Lamaisa, if this is the way Hashem is giving it to me, I'm more than happy to take whatever I can get and then take it as I can get it. They're just lifelong lessons that are important. And the lessons of how we're supposed to deal with things and how we're supposed to go about doing things in a certain understanding that Lamaisa, it's not our role to run. We're only supposed to be doing what we're supposed to be doing was very dearly imparted on us with the story that probably you're all familiar with, of the cook that she was an almana. The bachur and yeshiva got together and they sent a message to Reb David, and they told him that it's either she goes or we go. At the time there were very few talmidim in the yeshiva. They were all threatening that they would leave. The Reb David's life's mission at this point was to have the yeshiva go, and the Talmidim are making a point. And I remember the yeshiva saying with a smile that their point was valid. Her sanitary standards were not exactly up to par. Nevertheless, Reb David felt it wasn't warranted for him to close down for him to fire the cook. So therefore, he told the Talmidim, "I'm not firing him. You leave, you leave. We have the yeshiva that we have to have. We have a special malach. We have a misar that we have to continue. That's not the way it works. Our job in life is to do what we're supposed to do, and Hashem takes care of everything. Each one of these lessons was often highlighted, or always highlighted, with a chazal that speaks exactly to that point. Like the famous chazal on this point, where the Midrash brings down that Avram was stuck with a little bit of a dilemma. He didn't know what he should do about giving the brachos to Yitzchak, because at the one point, Yitzchak needed the brachos. At the same point, he was stuck that if I give the brachos to Yitzchak, what's going to happen to Yishmael and B'nai Keturah? And therefore he responded that I'm not the one who runs the world. My job is to do what I can do, and Hashem takes care of everything else. And that lesson is a lifelong message that was a part of us on these gatherings that we had yearly. The picture that the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal painted to us of Reb David was Miyasa the Yeshiva, the Adam Gadol who started the Yeshiva and transmitted to us our Mesora, transforming us from just Talmidim in Yeshiva to holders of Mesora, giving us a sense of mission as to how we need to run our lives. Well, we're gathered here tonight speaks volumes about what we gained from our Rebbe Zatzal. And the Mesorah that he imparted on us, it is a tremendous zechus that we have the opportunity to get together and to hear Divrei Zikaron from both the Rebbe Kolter and Rebbe Nyman. I'd like to call upon Rebbe Kolter.
Shus the Rosh Yeshiva. I know you see the white beard and all, but I was born after Reb David was Nifter. So I don't have any personal stories to tell. It is sort of a daunting task. not just, you got a sense that he was an unbelievable, towering figure of a gadol. If Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky referred to Rav David as his Rebbe Chaver, because they were contemporaries, but he still held on a certain level in their relationship, he was a Rebbe, you realize Rav David was Rav David. Definitely a cut above, somebody very, very special. And you felt that from the Talmidim in all the various stories that they would tell about their relationship with Rav David and the way he conducted himself. But I'm going to start with a paraphrase, so to speak, of a famous story about the Netziv. After New Haven closed, the yeshiva gave me an unbelievable amount of time to be mechazek me, years after. Especially Sukkos, he would come to Chicago. That was after New Haven. I moved to Chicago. And he would give me one story after another about Reb David and himself. And there was one thing that he kept telling me over and over and over again. And that was, when the yeshiva was really rock bottom, I don't know, 2.5 Talmidim, yeshiva used to talk about it, the good old days, because that's when he could really learn. Nobody bothered him. But the bottom line is, the yeshiva didn't look like it was going anywhere. And the truth was that he really was starting to consider seriously, he's going to go to Eretz Yisrael, sit and learn, and become, and no doubt about it, he would have become a world-renowned posek. So let's apply the Netziv perspective to this. After 120 years, this great giant, a Gadol b'Yisrael, sitting by the phone, answering kashas from all over the world, no shas, post and cold, with depth and profundity, and he walks through the door and they say, nice, but what happened to your 400 bachurim, your 400 talmidim yeshiva? And what about North Miami? What about Boca? What about Rochester? What about? What do you want from me? The question is, bottom line, what was it when it really looked as though there was no future for the yeshiva? And the logical next move was to go to Eretz Yisroel, learn, become the posek, that made the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal stick with his mission despite the apparent impossibility of fulfilling that mission. The answer is three things. Reb David, Reb David, Reb David. You know, it's interesting, at the dinner where they honored the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva just took the whole dinner and turned it into honoring Reb David. Every word out of the Rosh Yeshiva's mouth was Bischus Reb David, Bischus Reb David, the Messiah Reb David, it's all Reb David, Reb David. Reb David's transmission of his Messiah to his son was so powerful, it infused every cell of the Rosh Yeshiva's being. If the Mesilas Yesharim writes that a person must be Mis'arer u'Mis'ames about his obligations to life, then without a doubt, the Rosh Yeshiva had truly reached a profound level of clarity and understanding of the truth of his mission in life as it was given over by his beloved father and Rebbe. So let's take a look at this Mesorah, at least a little chunk of trying to just grasp what Reb David apparently gave over to the Rosh Yeshiva, but we're talking about a dynamic Rebbe Talmud father giving over that is probably in and of itself an incredible rarity in Klal Yisrael. Reb David's America was a barren spiritual wasteland. Just a couple of examples. Kashrus was corrupt. If my grandmother used to say about Germany, in Deutsch, die Steine sind treif. In Germany, the stones are treif. In America, forget it. Rabbonim who got serious about kashrus, their lives were at stake because of the corruption that was involved. Forget it. Kashrus, goodbye. Appreciation of the importance of Torah as far as Jewish continuity and Jewish life, forget it. There's a story about Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Rav Elchanan Wasserman went to see somebody, I guess, who was a big corporate giant in the steel industry, a Jewish gentleman. I don't know, after what he said, I take that back. And they came for money, and his words were, he came for money for the Baranovich Yeshiva, and his words were, let them dig ditches. They didn't want to tell Rav Elchanan at first what he said, but he nudged the translators, and they finally told him. He sat down on the ground and cried, literally in avelus, over the low level of Torah in America. There was a great Talmud of Slobodka, Rav Yehuda Levenberg. Rav Yehuda Levenberg went to New Haven, Connecticut. He was on a fundraising mission for Slobodka in America. And when he spoke, his eloquence and his ability to give across the beauty of Slobodka Musar blew the people away. On the spot, they offered him a job, $50 a month, and a house is yours, free. Now, today, maybe that doesn't sound like such a big deal. In those days, that was a big deal. That was a good salary. So he took the job. And when he would speak, they loved to hear him speak. They loved to hear his musser. And on a hot day, it was described to me by an old-timer in New Haven that there were people standing outside on the stairs and the fire escapes outside just to be able to hear Levenberg speak on Shabbos. And then, Rav Levenberg opened the yeshiva. There was also, he didn't make friends, you know, this kashrus business. He did not make friends with the butchers in town either. But bottom line is, when he opened the yeshiva, it was over. What are you doing? This is America. This doesn't belong in America. Stop. We're not going to help the yeshiva. We're not supporting the yeshiva. To the point where, tragedy of all tragedies, because his wife never had a nervous breakdown from this, that they got two rats as a Shalach Monas present, one Purim. The low appreciation of Torah in America. When people passed the Statue of Liberty, it was not uncommon for them to throw their tefillin overboard as a way of demonstrating, now we're coming to America, the land of the free, the golden of Medina. That's just a little bit of a picture of the way things were. Worst of all, there was an oppressive, you must work on Shabbos or your family will starve culture that ate away at the commitment to Yiddishkeit for every sincere Jew who wanted to hold on to the Kedusha of Shabbos. You know, today Hashkama Minyanim serve an entirely different purpose in shuls. The real origin of the Hashkama Minyan were these Nebuch sincere Yidden who felt they had no choice but to go to work, but at least daven on Shabbos, hear a Kriyas HaTorah. So for that, in that spirit, the Hashkama Minyan began. What a tragedy. This was the America that Reb David walked into, and he would say, they're waiting for you. They're waiting for us. They want to hear your Torah. But the mandate was clear. How can one idly sit by and watch one's brother drown in the mire of spiritual ignorance and poverty? Everyone should feel that responsibility to do what they can to help our brothers and sisters find their way back home. With a group of us had the zechus once to visit with Rav Huttner. This was after the 50th anniversary of the Regard site. It was the Rebbetzin's idea that we should get a little bit of Rav Huttner's perspective of Slobodka, which obviously was not exactly the same as the Reshiva. So Rav Huttner had a big kasha on the Reshiva. Slobodka stood for the development of each individual according to his talents, nature, personality strengths, weaknesses and strengths, and techunos hanefesh, the type of person that he is, what he likes, what he has a favorite, what he favors to do with his life. So therefore, how could the reshiva, clear across the board, encourage all his talmidim to go into some field of harboshes haTorah? Isn't one size fits all the antithesis of what Slobodka was all about? Good kasha. So here's what the reshiva answered. First of all, he said, in theory, Rav Huttner is 100% correct. But in America, there's a problem. Our brothers are drowning. You mean to tell me if there's a fire and the fire department hasn't gotten there yet and you're not a fireman, but there's something that you can do to help to save people from the fire, you're not going to help? Everyone has to feel an achrayus, a responsibility, that we have to do what we can help. You can be a Marbitz Torah even if you're a butcher, a baker, or a candlestick maker, but you got to think of yourself as a Marbitz Torah. And that's the answer. In truth, if we lived in an ideal, beautiful world and you had this innate feeling that medicine was your field and you want to help the world like that, could be. Your Rebbe would guide you in that direction, said the Reshiva. But not today, not here, where millions of our brethren, millions of Jews, need to hear Torah. So, how do we go about fulfilling that responsibility and succeeding in what seemed to be such an impossible task? Another major, major, major pillar of Reb David's Mesorah. Reb David had an unshakable faith in the power of Torah and the natural receptivity in the neshama of every Jew for Torah. That was a shidduch that was bound to succeed. Teach people Torah, the neshama is waiting for it. This powerful combination exists at all times, in all cultures, and every place on the planet. There's no such thing as that a Jew won't be receptive to Torah. Yeah, there are barriers, there are negias, there are different reasons why a person's not ready to just sign on the dotted line because he heard a nice Lubutka shmooze. But that's a different parsha, how you make the breakthrough. But ultimately, there's an incredible receptivity. Now, when we were in Eretz Yisrael in 77, 78, so there was a program that we had with the Air Force. The Air Force had certain lower-level, sergeant-level soldiers, flyers in the Air Force, who didn't have college degrees, and in order to allow them to become elevated to higher positions in the Air Force, they created a six-week program to substitute for their college degree. It sounds like a fair evaluation of what college is worth. Not bad. We could probably cut it down to three. But the bottom line is that they had this special program, and somehow included in that, was that to spend some time actually finding out what real Yiddishkeit was all about. Included in that program, they had the officers come to the yeshiva and actually learn with us, b'chavrusa. This program stopped, by the way, because they were losing Air Force flyers that they invested millions of dollars in training. It was too successful, Baruch Hashem. So I'm sitting and learning with these two guys about Yir Shalei Midas, and one of them had a realization of the beauty and the chachma that's in Gemara. And he remembered the propaganda that he got in the government public school from the socialist teachers. And he just went, ugh! With such an anger at what he was given before in comparison to the truth that all of a sudden he was exposed to. So, but I'm giving that as an example of how it's just so easy. Here's somebody who's been brainwashed to think Gemara's nonsense. You sit down and you open up Yir Shalei Midas, and he's angry that anybody ever dared brainwash him in the other direction. The power of Torah meant the learning of 100% pure Torah. It doesn't need to satisfy all the mishugasim that exist in any society that have to do with being politically correct. It doesn't need to be taught in any kind of an apologetic manner, and it doesn't even need a dazzling, entertaining format. Its profound beauty speaks for itself. Just speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and you'll have them eating out of the palm of your hands. That was such a clear belief to Rav David, and that was given over again with such strength embedded into the Rosh Yeshiva. In that program, of course, number one, and I say number one because I once heard the Rosh Yeshiva on a tape, I don't remember him ever saying this in a shmooze myself, but it was from a shmooze, where he said, if you're not going to learn Musar in the yeshiva, I don't need it. He's ready to close the yeshiva. I don't need Musar. So the work on the shir, the The EU doesn't mean anything to me without Musser. Musser, you know, I once gave a class in Chovas Halvavos in Chicago for mothers in the school in Ari Crown. And the first night, I said, in general, you know, Musser is not a very popular word. Everybody's shaking their heads. Yeah, of course, because just the expression. Whoever invented this expression should be. I mean, I don't know. But whoever invented this expression, really, the Rebbe gave us Musser. You know, that really sounds inspiring. Oh, the Rebbe gave us Musser. You know, oh, great. There were two women who looked with surprise at everybody else. What do you mean? Musser's great. One was a product of Rabbi Zaychek in Harrisburg, New York, and the other was from Rabbi Roden in Dallas, Texas. Musser is the fifth Shulchan Aruch of daily conduct, negotiating and developing interpersonal relationships, developing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the psycho-spiritual dynamics of that which make the human tick, in order to learn how to motivate ourselves and to be on guard for the natural human flaws that impede our ability to serve Hashem. That's Musser. It's a guide. It's a way of life that given that life is filled with infinite number of situations, it's only this beautiful system of the fifth Shulchan Aruch in the words of Chazal that we can possibly begin to develop an understanding of what Hashem wants us and wants from us in all these areas. The first shmooze I ever heard in the name of Reb David goes back a long way, but it made a powerful impact. Not a big, but it was just the idea. It was the first time I was exposed to this idea of you see in a Chazal, you see what you got to do, how you're supposed to live. In last week's parasha, so Yaakov cries when he sees Rachel Imenu, and what's the problem? The problem is, at least according to one pshat, I won't go with the other one, but according to one pshat, he remembers Yitzchak, or rather Eliezer, on behalf of Yitzchak, came to Rivka Imenu, loaded with gifts. Well, because of Eliphaz, he had nothing. He had nothing to give her. And he cried. So the obvious kasha is, come on. Rachel Imenu is going to marry Yaakov Avinu for his money. He's giving her the greatest eternity that possibly any woman could ask for. She's going to be a mama from Klal Yisrael. What do you want? Rachel Mavaka al Boneha. Is there anything loftier, greater than any other woman has gotten? Nevertheless, Rav David pointed out that obviously there's some innate need, an innate need to connect with something physical, a tangible gift that is an expression of the care, concern, and love for her. It's a need. Okay, she'll do without it. But that's the whole point, that the biggest picture that we may have on any situation never takes away from the fine details of concern to the individual that is necessary as we're busy being busy with the big picture. Another example from the Reshiva that really points out how these concepts are truly to be treated like halacha is in this week's parasha. So Esav wants Yaakov to travel with him, and Yaakov Avinu needs a good excuse, so we do have to understand that whatever Yaakov is going to say, even if it's only excuse, because why would he want to travel with Esav in the first place, but even as an excuse, he's trying to make peace with his brother, it has to be reasonable and logical. So the pasuk says, he tells Esav, you know, I'm responsible for so much. Little children, Yolodim Rakim, I'm responsible for Tzolon Ubakar, there's so many things I'm responsible for, and I'm therefore going to have to slow down if I'm going with you. You got your army; they're fit and, you know, they're in marine shape. Your guys, I'm sure, they're the best fighters, strong, ready. They can run with 200 pounds on their back. You know, I'm talking about a family with the Yelodim Rakim. We can't keep up with you, and therefore, I don't want to go with you. So says the Sephorno, that ki olai mutal dvar yolim rabim v'hatzol v'abokur olos, utfokim. And if I travel you with you, I'm going to push them. I'm going to push them hard to keep up with you. Why? Lichvoicha, for your honor, out of respect for you. Shelo la'akvecha baderech, not to slow you up. It's a little halacha here. You're going with somebody, it's not derech eretz, it's not covered to that other person to slow him down. You may have different needs or whatever, so then just tell him, go ahead. But that you force it, him to slow down feet. Slow lichvoicha. Now, wait a minute. You're balancing two incredible issues here. There's an inyan of Musar. There's an inyan of sensitivity, of kavod to Esav. Esav. Kavod to Esav. And on the other hand, I've got pikuach nefesh issues here. If I push too hard, who knows what could happen to the kids? Nevertheless, there was a concern that my concern to fulfill my requirements of pushing and running and rushing to keep up with you could be such that since I'm mechuyev to do it right, I'm mechuyev to do it properly. I can't simply say, well, you know, we'll try our best and finish. No. If you're going and you're committed to going, you're mechuyev al pi kavod to the other person to do everything you possibly can. And in this case, it could be I might make an error and push them too hard, chas v'sholom, something could happen. But the whole idea that you're looking at this inyan of kavod, this little inyan of derech eretz to another person as a halacha, as a mitzvah that has to be filled 100% properly. You can't simply just say, whatever. But no, that's not the way it's. If I can't do it 100%, then I can't guarantee, I can't do it, and that's it. So therefore I can't travel with you. That's Musar, and the power of Musar. And when you give a Chumash class to whether it's in a school or in a shul or to parents when you're principal of a school, whatever it is, these one after another opens up people's eyes to what Torah really is. When they begin to understand that there's more to Torah than just, you know, worrying about what people think, you know, we get hung up on all kinds of different details and mitzvahs and they don't understand it. But when they see that how hung up we are, how concerned we are when it comes to these basic sensitivities between human beings and their interaction, ooh, they take a step back. Wait a second, I didn't know this. This is Torah? Interesting. The next very powerful part of the Masorah that again was literally driven home into our Rebbe's very being, the profound dynamic transformational power of Limud HaTorah Be'iyun. Now, Limud HaTorah Be'iyun requires one thing that was a major part of the program, both by Reb David in the yeshiva, in the shiurim that we give. It's called Milchamto Shel Torah. Many good shiurim, Chofetz Chaim shiurim, have been described by observers as controlled chaos, where Talmidim and the Rebbeim are arguing and fighting over what is pshat, what's the svara. And just to show you the power that this learning Torah Be'iyun mixed with, or not just mixed with, the truth is the Iyun, the Milchamto Shel Torah, is the ingredient that gets us to the bottom of the truth. It's what ultimately creates the Vahe Besufa, the Ahava, the love between the Rebbe, the Talmud, the Chavrusa, the Chaverim. It's only when we struggle and fight with each other. Listen to two things that just came up in our learning of Maseches Sukkah lately. So Rav had sent some question about a halacha. He got an answer. They forgot it in Eretz Yisrael, and Bavel sent back an answer. So he was amazed. He says, you know what? It looks like they're better than we are. I always thought that here in Eretz Yisrael, we're not as oppressed as the Jews in Babylonia. The Jews in Babylonia were schlepped off in chains, and they were oppressed there. And their Torah, I always thought, was not as capable of transmitting the Masorah in its totality as perfectly as we could. But now that I see that we forgot something and they got something that we forgot, whoa, it could be they're better than us. And then he says, and then Rashi, in explaining this, that shall be able she'afal pilu amr lechamot zeruskeres. He says kiddushiv hakol giborim osei milchama. And what's the gvura oisin b'nei adam hanasunim b'shal shalol shel barzel? How could these people who are enslaved in Bavel, in chains, what is their gvura? What is their power? What is their might? Shegiboyrim hoyu b'milchamto shel Torah. So, just to understand, where does gvura and milchamto shel Torah come in? And I'm pointing this out because this is one of the key components. The transformational Torah, obviously, to a large degree, obviously, just comes from learning Torah. And when I start to see what kind of a human being the Torah wants me to be, and I start to change, that becomes a transformational power. But in the learning itself, the Milchamto Shel Torah has two components. A, Ein Habayshin Lomeit. If you're a Bayshin, and you're afraid to get into the ring, it's over. It ain't going to work. On the other hand, you're a fighter. You're going to get in there and get into the ring. But if you're a Baal Gaivin, you can't say, no, you're right, to your Chavrusa, it's over. So a true Lochem Batorah has to be a Gibor to overcome that shyness, a Gibor to over that reluctance and fear of being knocked down, one, two, three. And on the other hand, you have to be a gibor to be able to be humble enough to say, you are right and I am wrong. That's one. The other interesting thing is, later on in Sukkah, they point out that if you learn Torah, b'milchamto shel Torah, it's like pouring hot coals on your yetzer hara. Sounds like a good deal. Here we know that we're here to struggle and fight the Yetzer Hara, and Chazal tell us that it's like pouring hot coals on your Yetzer Hara when you learn Torah with Milchamto Shel Torah. One more example of the incredible necessity and importance of Milchamto Shel Torah is a story about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is brought down here by a Reb Nissen Goyen on Hamad Beis and Brachas. Rabbi Yochanan had 10 sons. Now, Rabbi Yochanan had 10 sons, and all 10 sons died. The last son fell into this vat of very hot, boiling, bubbling oil, and Nebuch, his entire body disintegrated. And all that Rabbi Yochanan was able to preserve was a bone from his pinky. He would wrap that up in some sort of a piece of cloth, and he carried it around with him. He'd meet somebody who had tzaras. He'd pull out the little bone. You have tzaras, let me tell you. And in using his own tragedy, he was able to be mechazek others. Now, when you think about it, the amount of gvura, of bitochem b'Hashem, and amunah b'Hashem, the power that it takes for a person who lived that kind of a tragedy to do nothing else but to use his tragedy to be mechazek others, that looks like a giant of strength. However, let's take a look at another event in Rabbi Yochanan's life. He had a chavrusa, Resh Lakish, and Resh Lakish died. They got him another chavrusa, and Reb Yochanan was inconsolable. Resh Lakish, when he sold a chiddush to Resh Lakish, gave him 24 extra new chidushim to answer the 24 kashas Resh Lakish had. This new chavrusa would bring 24 rayas to everything, he said. Who needs the rayas? Where's the Torah that's lost? 24 chidushim we get from every kasha of Resh Lakish. From his 24 kashas, and I'm getting somebody who gives me 24 rayas. This was such a tragedy for Rabbi Yochanan. He was in such a state of misery and pain over this that his chaverim and his pal HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have rachamim on him, and he passed away. So can you imagine? This pillar of strength that can take anything, that can live through anything, that can handle anything. The worst tragedies in the world. To lose a chavrusa and I have no milchamto shel Torah, it's over. It's over. how important that element of learning. And you know, one of the things that they, well, this I heard often from Rav David's Talmidim, was the playful joy that Rav David would get in his debate with his Talmidim. You could see how much he loved that back and forth with his Talmidim. And we certainly know how fortunate we were in the way the Rosh Yeshiva took us into his world and engaged us in deep discussion of the profound concepts in every sugya. This derech came straight from Rav David. Other Rosh Yeshiva in America did not think this style of teaching was appropriate for the average American bachur. It happened to be that that was the core issue between Rav David and the Balabatim in Torah Vadas. Make nice Frima Balabatim is given git. That's all. Just make Frima Balabatim. No problem. You can't do this in America. Litvish alum this. Come on, cut it out. So Rav David packed up, and Baruch Hashem, we have Yeshiva Chavetz Chaim. Rav Huttner also expressed that the derech of learning from Europe was not the best approach for the average American bacher. Once again, the Mesorah of how Torah is to be taught, that was given over by Rav David into the Rosh Yeshiva, and that it doesn't change regardless of country, culture, etc., was the Rosh Yeshiva's strength to withstand the naysayers. There was a meeting of Gedolei Yisrael, and this was right after the war, and conservative and reform was taking over America. And they decided, the Rabbonim, the Gedolim, decided we're going to have to send people out of yeshiva earlier. We got to start manning the Orthodox synagogues with Rabbonim from yeshivas. Yeshiva got up, much younger than all these Gedolei Yisrael, but he said, I have a Mesorah from my father. I'm sorry, I can't do it. And we saw, unfortunately, what happened to many of those unprepared Rabbonim who went out, who eventually mechitzas popped up in their shul, and you don't leave after you have five children. One of the great tragedies of the Jewish story in America. The Rashiva said that what went wrong was that they expected that these Talmidim would keep in contact with their Rosh Yeshiva. And unfortunately, the Nisyonos were such that it became, you know, they knew what the Rosh Yeshiva was going to say. There was once Rav Zalki Gewurz met with Rav Kalmanovich, the Ponovitcher Rav, and as they were speaking, Rav Kalmanovich asked Rabbi Gewurz, you sound like someone who learned in Europe. So he said, no, I didn't learn in Europe. I learned in America, but I'm a Talmud of Rav David Leibowitz. Rav Kalmanovich jumped out of his chair. Ihot gelelt by Rav David? You learned by Rav David? Then you learned in Europe. The Rav David's commitment to the teaching of Torah 100% according to the Mesorah meant that you learned in Europe, even in the Torah wasteland of America. Included in this Mesorah, oh, there's one other story about Rav David as the Rebbe. This was from Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky Zatzal. Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky comes back from Europe. He comes back from Europe, goes straight to Toronto, where his father was a Rav. And it's a Thursday. And his father says, good, I got a ticket for you, a train ticket. You're going to New York. You'll be there by Shabbos. It's nice to see you. Tati! I just came home, a long trip from Europe. I haven't seen you in I don't know how long. Tati, my son, you don't know what it means, even one more day with Rav David. That was the way the world understood, the yeshivish world understood and appreciated the greatness of Rav David as the paramount Rebbe. In closing, let us not forget that in addition to a world-class yeshiva of four... Hold on one second. There's a paragraph that got cut out for some reason. One more thing. The last important piece to all this is Rav Zalki Gewurz's mantra. Oh, it's right here. Rav Zalki Gewurz's mantra. Whenever he spoke about Rav David, so he would always say, Ich hab gesehen mein Rebbe in his Gatschkes. I saw my Rebbe in his long underwear. Now, why was this the penultimate description of the love that his Rebbe had for his students, because Rabbi Gewirtz was walking home from Brooklyn College, all confused hashkafically, after a professor loaded them up, his students up, with all kinds of apikorsis, and he needed to talk to Reb David to straighten it out. It's 11 o'clock, maybe later, and he knocks on the door, and there's Reb David. And despite the lateness of the hour, Reb David sat with him like a loving father and Rebbe to discuss the issues with patience. And this was always Reb Zalki Gewirtz's picture, the excellent picture of my Rebbe, of seeing that love that he gave to all his Talmidim. The other thing Reb David always did was he always addressed his Talmidim in the very formal Yiddish of you, and rather than the informal term for you. You know, in some language you have formal, informal, rather than just a general you. But in closing, let us not forget that in addition to the world-class yeshiva 400 Talmidim, all the branches, outreach programs, rabbanim, mechanchim, manning positions at American Eretz Yisrael, there was his Talmid, Rabbi Moshe Sheitz, that's all, who had the ability to give such a colorful and clear picture, koyach hatzir, when he said his shmuz. No one could bring a Slobodka shmuz to life as he did. He brought Slobodka Musa to Bayswater in Far Rockaway, and then as Rosh Yeshiva to the Israel branch, Rav Zalki Gewirtz in Waterbury, and Rabbi Fink in Sheepshead Bay, to name a few of Reb David's other most illustrious Talmidim who impacted America's Jews in such a meaningful way. And then there was Rav Avram Pap, whose leadership in America inspired thousands and thousands of Jews. In Eretz Yisrael, his baby, this program that he dedicated the last years of his life to with a tremendous Mesiris Nefesh, the program of building the Shuvu schools in Eretz Yisrael for Russian families, that these schools transformed tens of thousands of Russian families through these Shuvu schools. Looking at what has resulted from Reb David's teaching in the last 77 years reveals a profound and lasting legacy on Jews worldwide. Tehei Zichro Baruch.